Hey guys, welcome back to the All In Podcast. This is episode 55, so double nickels. I am one of the co-hosts, Mike Badzik, joined by my guy, Eli Cooper. What's going on, buddy?
Not much, man. Although, before we get into, you know, the number of different topics we have today, I want to give a shout out to a coworker of mine and one of the few coworkers that I would consider a friend, Sean Rankin, who did some, he's also a photographer. Did some nice family photos for us. We just got them back today. So if you follow me on Twitter at EL1_Coop, I posted one of them today in a very funny tweet, I must say, I did a little how it started versus how it's going thing with me and Holly. So you can see the pictures there. And if you want contact info for my guy to, you know, any kind of photo shoot, whatever, you know, hit me up and I can send me a DM, whatever, at me, whatever, and I can get you his contact info, man, because he's actually really, really good.
Well, that's good to know. Good information to pass along. So, give Coop a shout if you're looking for some photos, and he'll hook you up with his buddy. So, we also are presented by mybookie.ag. They are the presenting sponsor of the All In Podcast and All In Network. Head to mybookie.ag and use the promo code ALLINPOD with your first deposit and get a 100% match, as I drop my notes, 100% match on your first deposit. Use the promo code to get the bonus and let them know that we sent you. Mybookie.ag, awesome place. I've been using it for years to gamble on sports, politics. You know, you can place some bets on these Senate runoffs going on in Georgia right now. So they got all kinds of stuff going on there. mybookie.ag, use the promo code ALLINPOD. So we are first on this episode discussing NBA free agency. So normally this is our July topic, but with a pandemic happening, it's kind of thrown right into the middle of the football season. Yeah. But it is just as exciting as it usually is. A lot going on, and we are starting with Gordon Hayward, who in the last episode we talked about him declining his player option and leaving the Celtics. We talked about a couple different landing spots. He ends up with Charlotte on a four-year, $130 million. I had to double-check that number because it's a big one. Yeah. Four-year, $130 million deal. Thoughts on this move?
So for one, you know, to follow up from our previous discussion about Gordon Hayward, well played, Gordon Hayward, because he declined a $34 million player option to hit free agency. Yeah. And somebody in his circle knew something because he essentially got that back over a four-year span with this deal. So kudos to him, his agent. You know, never mad about an NBA player getting paid. However, I think this solidifies Michael Jordan as the worst front office decision in NBA history. And don't get me wrong, like Gordon Hayward is really solid. Like, I really don't think he's bad. You know what I mean? Like, he's not a bad player. Granted, he's had the injury problems over the last few years, so he hasn't quite been himself. But like for the most of the regular season this year, he was good. You know, he was like 17, 18 points per game before the shutdown. And then, you know, obviously he had his injury problems in the bubble, so he didn't contribute much there. But, you know, he had a solid season before the injury. Not $130 million worth, though. Like, he was probably a good, like, 15 to 20 mil a year player still, I think, especially for a team like the Hornets, where he's probably their best player now, I would say, off of this signing. So, which isn't saying much about the Hornets. But, you know, it's just – it seems like some teams are content with forever being mediocre. And this is the kind of contract that you, you know, sign a player to when you want to be mediocre. Like the Hornets, again, they won't be the worst team in the league.
Yeah.
They might even fight for a playoff spot. You know, you got LaMelo, Devontae Graham. It sounds like Terry Rozier is on the trading block. I doubt he stays after they picked LaMelo. Because he thinks he's a starter. And, you know, so, you know, you got LaMelo, Devontae Graham, and Gordon Hayward. That, in the East, you can fight for an eighth seed spot. Yeah. But, like, what good does that do you? You know, so And granted, maybe they're not trying to win now, so this probably doesn't matter. But this is just, you know, typical of mediocre teams just giving out bad contracts like this, you know, during free agency. So, you know, Michael Jordan, the GOAT when it comes to, you know, or arguably the GOAT when it comes to as a player, arguably the GOAT when it comes to awful decisions as a front office guy.
Yeah, so, I mean, first of all, good for Gordon Hayward, right? We're like I said last time, we are a pro player podcast, and anytime a guy gets paid, especially get paid that much, we're happy to see it. So good for him, I think, for him specifically. So before I talk about Charlotte, just for him, I think the deal makes sense. I think he probably looked at it and he said, you know, I could stay with Boston and be a fourth or fifth option. I could go to another championship type contender and be a probably third option and get paid less, or I can go to Charlotte. And he probably looks at Charlotte and he thinks to himself, you know, I have the opportunity here to be Gordon Hayward again. You know, because I think for a player, you know, especially a player like Gordon Hayward, who was really amazing, you know, obviously in college he was great, and then in Utah for those years, like, he was a very, very special player, one of the best players in the league, really. And he was the best player on those playoff teams when the Jazz were making it. Signs the max deal in Boston. Obviously, it goes terribly. And over the last 2 years, we've kind of developed this other meaning of Gordon Hayward in our head that's not a superstar player. That's a third, fourth option. At some points, we think of him as a bench player. So he probably looks at Charlotte and says, I'm sure he wants to get paid too, first of all. But second of all, he probably looks at it and says, well, I have the opportunity to be the guy here. If I can prove to myself that I'm the guy, I think it makes sense for him. I don't know how he fits with LaMelo Ball. You know, they might be the two polar opposites when it comes to mentality. And, you know, but we don't know about LaMelo Ball. You know, his vision, maybe it works really well with them. And, you know, you couple that with Devontae Graham and a couple other guys that they have. It might work out. It might work out well. I mean, I think their ceiling is probably a six seed. Would probably be the ceiling, right? Even that's probably a little bit high when you consider the teams that are in the East and made the playoffs last year. To make that kind of a jump, they're probably going to be fighting for a playoff spot in that, you know, that Orlando area. So I will say from that perspective, I think it could make sense. I don't expect a lot from this Charlotte team. I think that LaMelo Ball probably is going to be the ball dominant player. Now, Gordon Hayward, I would think, would be the leading scorer, but I think the ball is just going to be in LaMelo's hands so much that it's going to be hard for Gordon to be like the guy he wants to be. You know, it depends on the coach and the philosophy he wants, but, you know, maybe Charlotte just looks at it and says, well, we got the money to spend, let's just spend it, and they give it to him. Just for that. But overall, I like the move for Gordon Hayward. I think it makes sense, right? Like, he wasn't going to go to this contender and be a guy. So he gets his team. It works out for him. It works out for Charlotte to get a guy. Now they can fight for a playoff spot, at least fight for a spot. Maybe they're, you know, this is something that we talked about with Phoenix. And whenever they were talking about trading for Chris Paul, you know, it was kind of like, well, it's not going to put them over the top. They're not going to be a championship contender. And kind of my thing was like, well, if they're Phoenix, like, at some point you just have to be like, we need to try to make the playoffs.
Right.
And I think if you're Charlotte, you're looking at it and you're like, we need to try to make the playoffs before this gets really bad. And so you give this guy the money, you know, you have the cap room, you give him the money for 4 years. You're probably not going to be good in the next 4 years anyway. So you give him the money and just try to maybe get a 7 or 8 seed.
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, it's certainly a good deal for Gordon Hayward. Yeah. Certainly a good deal for, it doesn't make a ton of sense for the Hornets, but you know, long term at least. But you don't have to pay LaMelo really for another 4 to 5 years. So, you know, that's when this contract will be expiring. So, you know, maybe that's the timeline they're looking at here anyway. So we'll see how that goes there in Charlotte.
So the next moves that we're going to talk to is the defending champions. One of the you know, things we've been talking about a lot and a lot of people have been talking about is, are the Lakers going to try to get better or are they going to kind of just stand pat? Well, they've decided that they need to get better, probably the right move. They've gone out and they signed Montrezl Harrell and Marc Gasol as well. So really, you know, bolstering that front line after losing Dwight Howard, and that was a question mark anyway. So they bring in Harrell and Gasol. What do you think about the Lakers with this?
I like both of these moves. For one, Gasol is an upgrade from JaVale and Dwight Howard for me. Especially because he gives you the same thing on the defensive end, maybe in a different way, but he's still very good on the defensive end in pick and rolls, protecting the rim. The difference is he actually can step out and shoot the three, which will help big time with their spacing. When they want to put Anthony Davis at the four. So I don't know if who of these two is going to start. Whether it be Gasol with Anthony Davis at the four or Harrell at the four, and AD at the five. I think it's, it's going to end up giving you more spacing because, you know, AD can now kind of play that stretch five role or whatever.
Yeah.
You have more spacing than what you had with Dwight or JaVale on the floor. I would think it'd make more sense to start Gasol, I think, because he's the better defender. But regardless, what this really does, now that they've secured Gasol, is when Harrell's in the game, he will always have an Anthony Davis or a Gasol with him on the floor who can take the tougher defensive assignments. It will help them hide him because, you know, he was not good defensively in the playoffs. He's not a good, you know, defender. And you combine that with Lou Will, who was also on the floor with him a lot of times. In the playoffs, the Nuggets exposed that.
Yes.
Which they thought was a strength for them, at least on the offensive end. So the Lakers don't quite have that issue. They have better defensive guards off of their bench than the Clippers do. And now they'll have a solid defensive big man, for the most part, to pair with Harrell and kind of hide him defensively. And they got these guys relatively cheap. Harrell was 2 years, $19 million. And correct me if I'm wrong, he just won Sixth Man of the Year, didn't he?
He did, yes.
Yeah, he just won Sixth Man of the Year, and you're only paying him $8.5 million. That's a bargain, if you ask me. Mm-hmm. And then you get Gasol. I think his was like 2 years, $9 million. Granted, he's up there in age, so his market value wasn't super high. But again, two good deals. The Lakers also signed Wesley Matthews after losing Avery Bradley. They got KCP back. They got the Morris twin back. So they kept their core and improved with, Schroeder, Wesley Matthews, and these two being added in. I don't think you can be mad at all at what the Lakers have done this offseason if you're a Lakers fan. And I think they've cemented themselves as the team to beat still.
Yeah, they have to be the team to beat, defending champions already. And then you go out and add these guys. And Harrell, he's had his issues on the defensive end, but I think if you pair him with, like you said, Anthony Davis, now Marc Gasol, that is a huge boost for him. You know, really, we're looking at him in the playoffs last year, and we're like, wow, this guy's borderline unplayable against the Nuggets. Well, like, he's not really going to be in those type of situations anymore, which is good for him. Marc Gasol, I expect him to start at the five, and I can tell you we are going to miss him in Toronto. He is just like a steady force, not only on the defensive end, but really on the offensive end when things get a little bit crazy. And obviously they already have LeBron, who plays this role a lot of the time. But when things get a little bit crazy, he's a guy who can slow it down and put his imprint on the pace of the game, which I think helps the Lakers a lot. Wes Matthews is probably going to be a ninth or tenth man. But it's an upgrade, right? It's still an upgrade. I think they looked at all parts of their roster and said, this is not good enough, or certainly not good enough to guarantee us anything. And they got better. And kudos to them for not staying pat. We know we see a lot of teams, we've seen this over the years. Teams win a championship and they want to re-sign everybody. I remember think of the Mavericks when they won in 2011 and they gave J.J. Barea like something crazy like 4 years – $80 million, and that's what teams do. Like, that's what teams do across all sports. The guys who win, you want them to stay, so you give them outrageous amounts of money. Well, they didn't do that. They let Rondo walk. They let Dwight walk, and they retooled, and they're probably going to get better. Let's talk about the rumor mill going around the Lakers, and that is the possibility of Anthony Davis signing a 1+1 deal, so 1 year, then a player option, potentially leaving room for Giannis to join in 2021. Do you like this idea?
I love it. And not just because of Giannis. I don't necessarily know if I love the fit between him and Giannis, but that's something that you just work out, right? You know, yeah. If you want to talk about it in regards to that, sure. That is a great, you know, opportunity for the Lakers. But really when you're thinking about why for AD, I'm pro this is because there's only 2 years left on LeBron's deal. And he very well could retire at the end of those 2 years, depending on how these next two seasons go. You know, who knows what his plans are. But LeBron could be either retire or leaving at the end of these 2 years. If I'm Anthony Davis, I don't want to sign a 5-year deal with a veteran roster that is, you know, heavily carried by me and LeBron, and we don't really have, you know, youth player coming up where it's like, okay, well, even if LeBron leaves us high and dry, we'll be okay. No, he'd be back in a New Orleans Pelicans situation.
Right.
And if we look at it, it takes a while to get out of that situation. You know what I mean? A lot of times it takes a big free agent signing. It took the Lakers, 6 years to get back to this point, you know, just to making the playoffs, 10 years to get back to championship level. And if I'm Anthony Davis, I don't have that.
And that's relatively quick for franchises.
Right. That is relatively quick. Right. I mean, we've seen teams, you know, win it and not make it back, you know, or get close and not make it back. So it's especially someone who's, I think he's 28, 29, somewhere in that range. He does not have 10 years, you know what I mean, to try to win another title, let alone make the playoffs. So if I'm him, I'm absolutely signing a 1+1 this year, max amount of money. And then, you know, you reevaluate your options next offseason, you know, maybe have a conversation with LeBron, like, yo, like, you know, give me at least a hint what you're thinking.
Right.
You know, after this season, you know, so I can be prepared. Maybe I'll opt in for this one last year and then be unrestricted or you know, I'll opt out and make my own decision, which I think is an easier conversation if they win another title.
Yeah.
This year. So, you know, for Anthony Davis, for those and really any player, in my opinion, who's like top 5 or 7 in the league, I'm all in favor of 1+1 deals because the worst thing you do is get stuck in a long term contract with a franchise, you know, that really doesn't have a ton of stability. Like, the only player that I like really recommended that. Would ever recommend that for was like Tim Duncan. Like the Spurs are going to be good as long as Tim Duncan and Greg Popovich have a heartbeat. You know what I mean? So they're always going to be competitive. So he could sign 5-year deals his entire career with no issue because of how well the Spurs organization is run. And that core was all the same age. That ain't the case here for AD. He's still in his prime. A lot of the players he's playing with are either past it or at the end of it. So keep that flexibility. Don't sign the 5-year.
Yeah, and this is one of the things that we've learned in this player empowerment era is go ahead, sign the 1+1, sign the 2-year deal. It used to be that players would fight for 7-year deals. They were, you know, back the CBA before this one, you could do 7-year deals, and then you know you get these huge 7-year deals, and for the last 2 or 3, it's pretty much dead money because by that point most, you know, it's like these baseball contracts we see. So players were fighting for that, right? And then owners finally won a battle and they reduced it to these 5-year deals. And now the players are like, well, actually, we're good with 2, right? And we've seen now with precedent, like with Kevin Durant, you know, he tore his Achilles right before signing a max deal with Brooklyn. So, like, I think, you know, we now have precedent of, like, you know, the gamble always was take the long deal in case you get hurt. Well, now these players, especially these top 5, top 7 players, like you mentioned, they look at it and they're like, forget it. Even if I do get hurt, I'm going to get the amount of money that I want.
Right.
Because teams are realizing the premium that these superstar players are. So I think for him, it'd be a good idea to sign the 1+1. Plus, you mentioned, you know, getting left high and dry by LeBron. First of all, I don't know if retirement has actually ever crossed LeBron's mind.
Yeah.
Maybe it has, maybe it hasn't. But Look at the way that rosters end up after LeBron leaves, typically, right? The way he constructs things is win right now, win right now, win right now, which is, you know, why he's won 4 championships and been in the finals 10 times. But when he's not there, it can do damage to the roster. Think about Cleveland the first time. Think about Miami. Think about Cleveland after he left the second time after he they traded every draft pick they had for D Wade and Darren Williams and all these old guys. But that's what he does, because he's like, let's win right now. AD's probably looking at it and is like, I'm not getting left with those guys. Who signs a 1+1? It's a good move for him. I agree with you. I think he should do a 1+1. Even if it's not, let's go get Giannis. I think it just makes more sense for these superstars to take shorter deals.
Yeah. Yeah. And the other thing is, you know, because now, and this might not be the case going for the next couple of years, but the trend over the last few years is that the, you know, the max amount that you can make goes up each year because revenue has been going up and the salary cap has been going up. So like the higher, the max contracts have been going up. That probably won't happen in 2021, but when you keep this flexibility in general, you leave that door open where if it does, a max contract could go from, you know, 35 million to 40 million, you know what I mean, in this kind of a deal. So that's another reason to always, you know, leave that door open.
Yep. So let's talk about the Lakers' biggest rival, the Clippers. They kind of haven't done much this offseason, right, besides switching coaches. Haven't made a ton of splashes. They do sign Serge Ibaka here. I think that's a great pickup. I'm seeing all my Raptors getting clipped off here besides Fred. does this significantly help the Clippers?
Yes. It's a huge upgrade for the Clippers. That is their weak spot, is their defense and their front court. And Ibaka is a huge, huge asset for them. Not only because he's a better defender than both Zubac and Harrell, who were playing the five for them previously, he's also a better shooter than both of them. And in an offensive lineup that isn't really known for its shooting, you know, he helps with floor spacing. A stretch five always helps with floor spacing. He also helps them with the ability to switch 1 through 5. You know, so with Ibaka on the floor and, you know, bringing a guy like Zubac, who I like better off the bench anyway.
Yeah.
You know, you're bringing him off the bench and now you're inserting someone like Ibaka. He gives you more flexibility defensively and switching, rim protection. He's just flat out one of the best shot blockers of all time. So, you know, he gives you that aspect of his game. And then on the offensive end, you know, as we know, he can step out, knock down the mid-range shot, the three, you know, and be productive there. So all good for the Clippers. To me, this is probably the only area that they really needed a drastic upgrade in.
Yeah.
In this role, I should say. The rest of their roster is on paper bulletproof. Now I think they might need to add, they actually added Luke
Kennard.
Luke Kennard from the Pistons during the trade in the draft, which addresses, you know, the issue that they had where they didn't really have like a sniper. So
yeah.
He kind of gives them that as well. Those are the two things that I thought the Clippers were missing that the Nuggets really exposed. So, you know, I think the roster is even more bulletproof than we thought it was last year.
I mean, I'm not like a big Luke Kennard guy. I think it probably helps just from a shooting perspective. I don't know. Like, I don't think these moves get them on the same planet as the Lakers. I will tell you, I do love Serge Ibaka. And, you know, this is kind of like a sad podcast for me talking about all my guys leaving the Raptors with Serge and Mark. We're going to be depleted on the front court, but we did sign Fred. So I think he addresses a huge need. You know, when we watched the Denver series, I mentioned it with, you know, with when we were talking about Harrell, but like they just could not do anything with Jokic.
Yeah.
This helps. He's their best chance right now to do something with Jokic. And he can step out. He was when they played Boston, he was burning them. Three. The dude can definitely shoot. So, no, I think it's a good signing for the Clippers. So let's do this then. We've talked about good signings for the Clippers. The Lakers, bad signings for the Hornets, winners and losers of free agency, the NBA offseason in general. Who are your winners and losers?
Well, I would say the biggest winner so far for me would be the Lakers. I do think the signings that they've had so far have been, when it comes to elevating your team or your roster, their signings have, on top of them already being a championship caliber team, I think their signings have improved them the most of anyone else. And that's including, you know, I would include the Dennis Schroeder trade in that. So yeah. If we're talking off season in general, I think their roster, which was already championship worthy, has been upgraded to become even better. And I think that makes them a winner here in free agency, you know, or the off season, however you want to put it. My other big winner, I would say, of this offseason is the Sixers.
Yes.
I think the Sixers have had a really good offseason. I do. And it's I feel so much better coming into this year because we felt like we were in this impossible situation with that Horford contract. And now it seems like we have options. We talked about what they did on draft day. And now the signing of Dwight Howard brings great depth behind Joel Embiid. I think you need a very good center behind Embiid because of how often he's hurt and, yeah. You know, because of the shape that he's in. So they would be my second winner. I'd put the Clippers in the winners category, so I'll put them third, obviously, for the reasons we just discussed. And my biggest loser of free agency is a tough one because I don't know that anyone has had a terrible free agency. But I would say the biggest loser has been the Pistons.
Yeah.
Here's why. They signed an absurd amount of centers in this offseason. I believe so far they went out and got Mason Plumlee. They signed another center, and I think they drafted I can't remember who they took with their top eight or with the top eight pick. But their
they took Killian Hayes.
Right, they took Hayes. So it wasn't a draft pick, but they took they signed two centers so far. And then Jeremy Grant.
A ton of money into Jeremy Grant.
Yeah, 3 years, $60 million. So you're talking $20 million a year for a guy who, you know, essentially, I don't even know that you'd consider him a three in today's NBA. I think he's more of a stretch four. I put the quotations around stretch because he shot it well last year, but he's almost never shot it that good throughout his career. So we'll see if that lasts. But that's a lot of money for a role player, essentially. And they expect him to have an expanded role, I guess, with the Pistons. I don't know what that means for a guy who can't create his own shot.
Yeah.
But, you know, it is what it is. They also signed DeLon Wright coming over from the Mavs. So, you know, they've made a lot of signings here in free agency, none really impactful. And again, I don't know that the Pistons want to win free agency right now. I don't think they're in that kind of a mode, but the signings that they've had so far, are head scratchers to me. So I would say they would be my one loser, from this free agency so far.
Yeah. So I agree with your winners, the Lakers and the Sixers, the third team, and maybe I'd even have them one or two, is the Celtics. Signing Tristan Thompson.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
A lot of jokes get made about Tristan Thompson, but he's really good.
Mm-hmm.
Great rebounder. Talk about switchability with a big guy. Absolutely. Very switchable. And that's kind of what they needed, right, was that big guy. Yep. And they also signed Jason Tatum long-term, so I think they're a winner. Losers, the Cavs. They signed Matthew Dellavedova to a one-year deal. That's terrible. Why would you do that? the Pistons, yeah. It's the usual suspects, right? The reason why some teams are always good is because some teams are really dumb. And the Hornets, the Pistons, the Cavs, we're seeing that. So I think they're the usual suspects and they lose.
Yeah.
So I mentioned Tatum. We have seen five young stars sign max extensions with their team. Mitchell, De'Aaron Fox, Jason Tatum, Bam Adebayo, and Brandon Ingram. So I'm going to ask you to pick three, the three you would want going forward out of those five?
So I think this is tough because I'm a fan of all five of these guys that are listed here. If I had to take three, I would, I think the no brainer is Tatum, right? Yeah. I think he's the most elite out of all the five that are here. Donovan Mitchell, I think is, you know, probably the second most decorated player here on the list so far throughout his career. I was tempted to take Fox over him though, because I really like De'Aaron Fox, but Donovan Mitchell has had incredible playoff success. As far as individually, the Jazz, you know, probably get as far as they should for a team with the roster that they have. And then, you know, the third one, although I'd probably take him second on this list, would be Bam. With the way that he's developed and what he's evolved into at this point in his career. It's hard to find a center like him who is so versatile on defense when it comes to being able to switch on the guards and protect the rim. Also, and then on the offensive end, be able to, you know, catch on the block and score down there, but also be able to, you know, play in pick and roll situations, make those next passes, be able to run your offense through him. So a guy having all of those tools at the center position is rare and hard to find. So I would say Bam would be the third guy I'd take out of these five.
So I agree with you. Those three were my three as well. I opened this up to our NBA analysts, Todd, Fetzko, and Taylor. They also picked those three. But I will say, you know, and I think Bam and Tatum are the two that you definitely take.
Yeah.
But Brandon Ingram was the most improved player this year. Had an amazing year until Zion got back, really, and then he still was really good. I'm not sure I wouldn't take Brandon Ingram over Donovan Mitchell. It's just that Mitchell's had the playoff success already.
Yeah.
So we kind of think of him differently.
Right.
You wouldn't take Brandon.
I think both of those guys, I think Ingram and Fox have more upside than Donovan Mitchell. Like I think Donovan Mitchell, what he is right now is what he's going to be. And that's an all-star, you know, reserve who's going to get you 20 to 25 points per game on any given season. You know, and can really fill it up. But like Ingram, you know, when he was coming out, he had KD like comparisons. I don't know that he'll ever be that good, but he certainly has, you know, the talent. He's 6'9", super long and athletic. Like he has more upside as a defender than Donovan Mitchell does.
Yeah.
And then same with Fox. Like Fox is a freak athlete and one of the fastest players in the league. You know, he could be one of the best defensive point guards in the league if he really wanted to. And if he, you know, had that mentality and then, you know, with the way the game is moving, it's going to be difficult to keep a guy like him in front. And if he, you know, develops his jumper to be consistent enough, you know, the offensive game will be even better than it already is. So, you know, I think the ceiling for those two is higher. They just haven't, like you said, they haven't had the early on success. And honestly, like, you know, maybe if, Mitchell got drafted into a better situation than those two.
He did.
You know, and even, you know, Ingram even got traded into a worse situation than what Mitchell is in now. But, you know, we could start to see those things change. The Pelicans have a nice young core developed. The Kings seem stuck in mediocrity. But, you know, I thought they had a decent core with him and Buddy, but obviously there's issues going on with Buddy Hield and the Kings. So we'll see how that ends up playing out. But then they got Bagley, you know, down at the 4/5 position. So they have a young core that they can build on. We'll see how that goes. But it's just Mitchell has the more tenured success so far.
Yeah, I agree, and that's why I picked him too. Is just because I think we know what we're getting with him. But definitely on an upside perspective, and how good they can be, I might take Fox and Brandon Ingram. So okay, that's all the NBA topics that we have for today. So we are going to head over to a different YouTube video. So if you're on YouTube, head to the channel, subscribe to the channel while you're there, and click on our NFL Week 11, right? Week 11 recap.
Yep.
We are going to be talking all things Week 11. So make sure you go over there, hit subscribe, and watch that video. If you are listening on audio, sit tight. We'll be right back. All right, everybody, welcome back to the All In Podcast. If you are watching on YouTube, make sure you head over to our channel and subscribe. And then click on the NBA show that we just recorded and posted, talking all things NBA free agency, Lakers, Clippers, Gordon Hayward, everything going on pretty much. So make sure you go check that out. If you are listening on audio, welcome back from the break. We are talking NFL right now, NFL Week 11. And we are going to start with the Monday night game, which was Rams versus Bucks. And the Rams won here. Big game in Tampa Bay. Kind of a statement game for them, I'd say, in some ways. What were your thoughts on the game, buddy?
Yeah, it was an interesting game. I thought Jared Goff was really good.
Yeah.
Especially against a tough Buccaneer defense. This Buccaneer defense has been pretty good for the most part of this year. And, he pretty much picked them apart. Cooper Kupp was all over the place, had a ton of catches. Robert Woods got involved eventually. And, they threw it a ton. And it was a lot of, not a ton of downfield throws, but it was, a lot of nickel and diamond down the field. He put together some great drives. And defensively, the Rams, I thought, did a pretty solid job of keeping the Bucs offense in check. Other than, the Mike Evans touchdown, where he just kind of went through like three or four guys to get into the end zone. That was some pretty bad tackling. But I thought they did a good job overall. Obviously, they got the pick at the end to seal it. But honestly, this, with the way the Rams have been playing, I think this is three of their last four they've won and two in a row. And all against pretty solid teams in the last 4 weeks. They had a letdown against Miami about 3 weeks ago. But other than that, they've got some good wins here. They're now sitting at 7-3, tied for first in the division after a shaky start to their season. They're looking like a possible NFC contender.
Yeah, no, I mean, I've been high on the Rams, like really since our offseason shows. I was very high on the Rams, picking them. The question was, they got the names on defense. They've certainly got the weapons in the receiving corps. The question was always Jared Goff, and is he going to show up in these games, or is he going to make the dumb mistake? Every once in a while, he had a couple throws where you're like, okay, that's Jared Goff. But for the most part, like you said, like he was solid. Like he was kind of picking them apart. I don't think we could say the same for Tom Brady. He seemed to struggle. And both of these defenses are good. The Rams have a couple more playmakers probably. But I think, if I'm looking at these two teams and, which quarterback, which team do I trust more? It's probably the Rams right now, especially – if they can get solid performances out of Goff. He was the key. He's the key to me. Mm-hmm. They go as far as Goff goes.
Yeah.
And I think you wanted to bring up that Tampa Bay, not the best game from Tom Brady, and his coach was vocal about that.
Yeah. Yeah, Bruce Arians said, in the post-game interview that Tom Brady looked confused by some of their coverages and was saying, in reference to, I guess, a deep ball that they missed, he was like, we don't miss that in practice. And, for one, if your 20-year veteran quarterback is being confused by coverages, to me, that's on the coaching staff. Like, I don't know what kind of film you were watching that he wasn't prepared for, but to me, that's 100% on you. And maybe him a little bit as a player. I know players watch their own film. But for you to come out and tell me that a player wasn't prepared for something, that is 100% your job. So you might think that's a knock on Tom Brady for some reason. To me, that's more of a knock on you. Granted, I know, NFL teams disguise coverages and they're really good at that. And, that's the kind of things that they'll try to do pre-snap to throw someone like Tom Brady off. But I find it hard to believe that a guy who's been in the league for 20 years was easily fooled or wasn't reading coverages correctly, from the Rams defense. To me, this is one of the worst things a coach can do is throw a player under the bus in any circumstance. I never understood it. There's a lot of coaches that do it. The first one that comes to mind is Jose Mourinho. If anyone who's tuned in watches soccer, he loves doing that, where nothing's ever his fault. And Bruce Arians seems like one of those kind of guys. And for, you know, I'm from the York area, which is where Bruce Arians is a longtime York native from our area. So I hate to say bad things about him, but I think this year of all years have kind of exposed him as a coach. And, you know, I think this roster is more talented than the 7-4 record that they're showing. And I think he has a lot to do with that.
I agree with you. I don't quite understand his reasoning for saying that at all about his quarterback. Like, it's not like anyone was necessarily blaming him for the loss.
He kind of right.
Said it. So let's move from Monday night to Sunday night with the Chiefs beating the Raiders. Raiders had a real chance here, but Patrick Mahomes started doing Patrick Mahomes things. Marched down the field in like what 47 seconds for the game winning score. Something like that. Are the Chiefs unbeatable?
So no, because this Raiders team beat them the first time.
Yeah.
And almost did it again. Like, this Raiders team has their number. Yep. The Chiefs, I think they have their vulnerabilities on the defensive end. But if you leave Patrick Mahomes too much time, like the Raiders unfortunately did in this case, and he gets the ball last, I think you're going to lose. So, you know, in this case, I was actually really impressed by the way that the Raiders played in this game, specifically Derek Carr.
Yeah.
Derek Carr has been really good when they've needed him to be this year. Like, the last couple weeks, they ran it a ton. So, like, from a numbers perspective, his numbers weren't great. But he didn't play bad. Like, he didn't hurt them in any way. They won those two games. And then this week, against a tough Chiefs team where he had to put up points, he did it. And if you ask me, he put up enough to get them the win. He needed his defense to make one more stop. And, you know, that's a tall task to ask of anyone. I think they actually had a minute 47 left. Okay. So just under 2 minutes is plenty of time for Pat Mahomes to put a drive like that together. But for a team as good as the Chiefs, if I'm the Raiders, I'm coming out of this feeling confident because you already beat this team once. You put up 40 on them before, and then you put 31 up this time. And to me, that's kind of like, all right, well, if we can stay in shootouts with the Chiefs, there's really no reason why we can't beat any other team in the league. And I have that feeling about the Raiders. We've talked about them a few times in the podcast leading up to this, but I think, like, granted, in a loss, this is the game where it's kind of like, you know, like if I'm a team, I don't want to see the Raiders in the playoffs.
Yeah.
This is not a team I want. I'm excited to see. I think I'd rather see the Ravens.
I think I might rather see the Ravens.
Like, and we'll get to them, but like,
and we will.
I think I'd rather see them. I have to wonder if this Raiders team was in the NFC. Like, yeah. I think they'd be in like my top three.
Yeah, they very well might be. Like, they've been really good. I think this also exposed some things about the Chiefs' defense.
Yeah.
That's a problem area for them. And as a Steeler fan who's thinking the Chiefs are probably the other team that we're fighting with for the AFC title, it's encouraging to see their defense struggle so much. And this is an over and over thing. It seems like they cannot get stops. Maybe they just, they know they have Mahomes, so they're kind of playing lax. But, I think the Raiders are a really solid playoff team. I imagine that they'll get in with a 7-team format. There's a lot of teams that are jumbled up there, but I like them better than all of the other ones who are in that, that jumbled mess of 6-4-ish, 7-3-ish wildcard teams.
Right.
So I hope they do, because I think they'd be a fun game no matter who they play.
Yeah, because, like, if you're looking at right now, I think the division leaders are Chiefs, Steelers.
Bills.
Bills. And then the Colts hold the tiebreaker over the Titans, but they're both 7-3.
Right.
And then you're looking at your next three there would be Titans, the Browns are in second over the Ravens because they're 7-3 now as well. And then you have Raiders and Ravens. So that is that's about eight teams that's your seven there. And I don't know that and then you have the Dolphins. I'm sorry. The Dolphins make it eight. So, like, your top, all those teams are solid and playoff worthy. If you ask me, it's a matter of who drops out. I think it's probably the Dolphins. You know, because I think they're a little too inconsistent of all these teams. But you know, it's definitely a shootout there, and the AFC playoffs are going to be very fun to watch because there's really not a team where it's like, other than I think, you know, maybe Cleveland is probably the one team where you're like, I feel pretty confident beating them because of Baker Mayfield. And maybe, yeah, right. You know, after how Miami looked, you know, maybe you feel a little more confident against them, but like their defense has been really good throughout this year. So I don't know that you love that matchup if Tua is playing well. So, you know, I think the top teams, granted, you know, the Steelers and the Chiefs have, you know, much better records than everybody else. They will be challenged throughout the playoffs for sure.
Yeah, there's going to be no easy games in the AFC playoffs. I totally agree with you. I think I like the Raiders more definitely than the Dolphins. The Browns I like. They just have a way of making the game nasty, which kind of bodes well for them in their running game.
Yep.
But, yeah, it's going to be a tight race for those wild card spots. Let's go to the Colts, who are the AFC South leaders right now, but they're in that mix of 7-3, 6-4 teams in the AFC. They beat the Packers. Really good win for them. You know, we had a lot of questions about Phil Rivers. Played really well, and they got the win over the Packers.
Yeah, and he's played well since I questioned him being the starter, you know, because of white privilege. So I'm sorry, Philip Rivers. I don't know if you heard that. we apologize. I didn't mean to come at you like that, bro. But last 2 weeks, he has been really good for them. And, you know, obviously their defense is top 10 in the league, bare minimum. This week, the Packers got to them, which I think is a positive sign if you're Green Bay that you were able to put up, you know, 31 points against a good Colts defense.
Yep.
But Green Bay's defense is soft, to say the least. That's the thing. You know, Phillip Rivers has had two good weeks, but the Titans and the Packers defenses are not good. They're bottom 10 in the league overall. So, you know, can Phillip Rivers continue these performances against tougher defenses is really the biggest question I would have about the Colts. You know, last time they faced a tough defense was the Ravens, and they did not look good. So that's the biggest question mark. It's still Phillip Rivers. It will go as far as he takes them, you know, and can he win those big games will be the question.
Yeah, and my answer right now would be no to the questions. Yeah. I'm not sure that Phillip Rivers can do it against the best defense in the AFC. We're talking about the Steelers. We're talking about, you know, the Ravens. We saw how they did against them the first time around. But I think this is why you pay Phillip Rivers, right? Games like this where it's close and it's a, you know, back and forth. Maybe he's got some kind of veteran moxie where he can get you across the finish line in games like this.
Right.
And the Colts are, you know, quietly becoming, I would have them as the third best team in the AFC right now, based on the defense, based on their ability to put up points when needed. Anyway, it seems like I think they're right. The Packers are a different story. I don't trust the Packers at all right now.
Yeah. And it's all because of that defense. Honestly, like if Aaron Rodgers was again lights out in this one, I don't think you could really ask for more from him. You know, because it was a shootout, they probably didn't run it as much as they wanted to. I think Aaron Jones only ended up getting like 10 carries in this one. So, you know, maybe that's something you look more in trying to have the ball more to keep that defense off the field. But that defense is atrocious.
Yes. Yeah, definitely is atrocious. So let's go to our last game from Sunday that we'll talk about, which was Ravens Titans. Titans won in overtime. I thought the Ravens were going to win. Coming into the game, I thought they were going to win during the game. Even when it went to overtime, I thought they were still going to win, and they did not win. What is wrong with the Ravens?
Well, you know, it's something that we've talked about, you know, multiple times on this podcast. This is, you know, second loss in a row and three in the last 4 weeks. Yep. And in there's one common denominator in all three of their last, you know, and all three of these losses is Lamar Jackson cannot throw the ball outside the numbers. Yep. He cannot make, you know, and it hurts him when he's trying to make these game winning drives because he essentially has to become a pocket 2 minute QB. That is not his strength. He is of all quarterbacks in the league, what you call a front runner. He wants, you know, in order for you to win with Lamar Jackson as your quarterback, you have to play really good defense and get stops and then be able to run the ball effectively control the clock and have the lead. Lamar Jackson wants to be playing with the lead. He does not want to have to get involved in any kind of shootout, you know, per se. He wants to, you know, be able to run the ball and then hit you on those seam throws. And if you take that away from him, he is a mediocre quarterback. And it is what it is at this point. The Titans are the same team that beat them in the playoffs. They did the exact same thing here, same formula. You know, and I think the other thing is that the Ravens might have to look at is knowing Lamar's limitations. You got to cut Ingram out of the rotation. And really, it should be a 70-30 split between Dobbins and Gus Edwards. Because Dobbins is by far their most talented running back. When he gets 15-plus carries, he's clearly more productive than when he gets less. I saw a tweet from someone who broke down the numbers of how much better he is yards per carry-wise when he gets 15 or more carries, even going all the way back to his days in Ohio State. He's a runner who is more effective with more volume. And to me, as a coaching staff, these are things you have to know.
Right.
You know, and if you go back to what they did last year, their running back situation was not a committee last year. It was heavily, you know, because Mark Ingram was good. It was heavy Mark Ingram, heavy Lamar Jackson, and both of them had 1,000-yard season. And now they're trying to mix in three guys. They're not getting into a rhythm, and it's not allowing them to hide Lamar Jackson's weaknesses. You know what I mean? So because they're not dominating with their rushing attack. So I think that's where at this point in time, it's now time for the Ravens to say, okay, well, Mark, you know, we appreciate everything you did for us, you know, last year and what you've done in your career, right. But it's the young kid's time to shine. We have to get the ball in this kid's hand, control more clock, help our defense out a little bit as well by having the ball more. And you know, the less Lamar Jackson has to throw the ball, the better chance we have of winning.
Yeah. So, you know, things that we've been saying about Lamar Jackson, they come true again. Like, I think this is starting to become a well-known thing is like games where they're losing, it's going to be rough for them, because you cannot bring them back. I think what you say about J.K. Dobbins and Mark Ingram is a really good point. I actually texted you and our NBA and soccer analyst Sean Turner, who's a Ravens fan, during the game, that every time they're about to give the ball to Mark Ingram, they should stop, take a breath, and give it to J.K. Dobbins instead, because he's just so much better, and it's so noticeable when he has the ball. Like, it's not even close, really, like when you watch the two run. Lamar Jackson, I don't think I need to say anything more, right? I've been saying the same thing for the past year and a half probably about him, but it has to improve for them to have any kind of chance to win playoff games.
Yep.
This will be a good test for them this week. You know, a team he has struggled against. He struggled against all good teams, but a team that he struggled against this season is the Pittsburgh Steelers. They are getting them on Thanksgiving night, Thursday night football, Thanksgiving style. Is this interdivision really? Really, the Ravens, if they lose this, they have zero chance. They literally have zero chance of winning the division. The Steelers will clinch the division with this win, at least over them. They wouldn't clinch it over the Browns yet. We need one more win for that yet. Right. But they can clinch the Ravens not winning the division this year if they win on Thursday night. This is in Pittsburgh. What are you expecting from this game on Thursday night?
Yeah, so it's actually going to get kind of interesting because you know, there's some COVID cases going on there in Baltimore. Mark Ingram and J.K. Dobbins, the two guys we just talked about, are both out. So it's going to be the Gus Edwards show, which isn't a bad thing. I think he's been productive when he's gotten the ball, just not as much as J.K. Dobbins. You know, you don't have that threat of J.K. Dobbins. I think that changes the game. Mm-hmm. But the formula stays the same here until Lamar Jackson figures it out. You know, you got to take away those running lanes and, you know, force the ball. You want not only the running lanes, you want to take away those inside running games that they love to attack with read options. You got to take those away. And then you got to take away the seam throws. which is where Lamar Jackson's really good at those. He hits seam throws with no issue, or throws over the middle. So you want to take that away and make him throw the ball outside the numbers as much as possible. And if you're the Ravens, you know, you signed Dez Bryant for a reason. He got much more playing time this time. And maybe it's like, you know, you're talking about throwing the ball outside the numbers. You know, give him a couple of jump ball situations, see what he can do. Give him some back shoulder throws, some contested catches. They're probably going to be, because, you know, who knows what kind of separation he's creating out there at this age. But, you know, I think at some point you have to kind of find a way to get Dez Bryant involved. I think they have to take more shots over the top with Marquise Brown, because, you know, only 3 targets in the last game, no catches. And, you know, I think they have to either find some ways to take some shots over the top, or, you know, scheme him open to where he can get the ball in his hands and, you know, get into some space. You know, one of the things I love that the Rams did on Monday night is they run these, we used to call them rocket screens. I'm not sure what the term is used for them in the NFL. But kind of those screens where those the receivers get that run towards the line of scrimmage as their linemen are getting downfield, and they catch, they turn, and they have, you know, running lanes. You know, maybe you start to throw some of those in there. Their playbook seems incredibly, you know, limited when it comes to, you know, what they do. And it's like read option on first and second down, and then RPO on third down. And it's just like, you know, it's becoming predictable at this point. I think they have to find ways to get the ball to the outside the numbers and be a threat out there, whether it's, you know, with Dez Bryant, Marquise Brown, you know, or however they got to do it. But they've got to mix up their play calling a little bit, I think, to help Lamar Jackson out in some way, you know, to get the ball outside the numbers. But if I don't know how you do that on a short week. So,
yeah.
I think that's more of a long-term solution for the Ravens. I think they lose again this week, which would put their playoff hopes in jeopardy, really.
Yes.
You know, and let alone the division title. So, but I'm taking the Steelers in this one. I don't think it's going to be particularly close with everything that's going on in Baltimore. So I'm going to take the Steelers in this one, 31, Ravens 14.
Oh my gosh! Wow, that's my type of prediction with a Steelers game. I actually think it's gonna be closer than that, just because of the fact that every Steelers Ravens game is close.
Yeah,
really, my entire life, as long as I can remember, these games are close. So I think the Steelers are a much better team right now, especially considering the COVID stuff that's going on with the Ravens. I just don't know how they hang in there at Heinz Field. You know, Steelers are better. Like, I think, you know, the first time they played, we maybe were thinking the Ravens were better, and the Steelers were able to squeak one out. Now the Steelers have kind of shown their dominance, especially this week against the Jags. They tore them up. Obviously, it's the Jags. But the pressure and the defense was actually forcing turnovers on Luton Free. So I think the Steelers are just better. I think the COVID doesn't help the Ravens. I still think it's going to be generally close because – it is Steelers-Ravens, so I probably would go I'll do 31-24. It's a touchdown game, but the Steelers end up getting the stop. It's not too dissimilar from the last time these guys played, with the Ravens having a chance, but the Steelers getting a stop. So you want to pick the other two Turkey Day games? They're pretty much garbage, but we'll pick them anyway. So the 12-31, of course, is always the Lions. This year, they get the Texans coming to town, so at least we'll get to see Deshaun Watson. I think Matthew Stafford's playing, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're kind of getting used to not seeing him on Thanksgiving. We've had a lot of Chase Daniel or Sean Hill or Dan Orlovsky on Thanksgiving. It seems like Stafford is never playing in those games.
Right.
But he is playing this time. Texans are 2-point favorites in Detroit. Who do you think is going to win?
I am taking the Texans in this one. It looks like Kenny Golladay will not be available once again. He didn't practice today, so on a short week, I think you have to practice on a Tuesday really to have a chance to play on a Thursday. So, you know, no Teddy or no Kenny Golladay. They had some other issues injury-wise as well on the defensive end, which the Panthers kind of exposed this Sunday. Shout out to PJ Walker. But, Yeah. So, and the Houston Texans actually seem to be kind of on the rise. Deshaun Watson's playing much better as of late. And a lot of it is because of the Bill O'Brien firing. I think a lot of it is also because they had the most brutal schedule you could possibly have in the first 4 weeks of the season, with Steelers, Ravens, and Chiefs in that first four, you know, three of the teams you played in the first 4 weeks, and they played someone else who was tough that I'm blanking on. But, you know, as the last couple of weeks, I think, you know, the win over the Patriots was a solid, very good win for them. And with the way Deshaun Watson is playing against a weak Lions secondary, I think that bodes well for the Texans. So I am taking the Texans in this one. I'm going to take them against, to cover as well.
Okay. I think I'm going to go with the Lions here. And here's why. First of all, it seems like the Texans should be the pick here. I agree with you. They are probably a better team. They probably have the better coaching staff. They definitely have the better quarterback. But both these teams suck, I think. The Lions are, I think, playing for Matt Patricia's job. That could help them. That could hurt them. But sometimes we see teams get a little boost there. Thanksgiving, Stafford's going to play. I think this is pretty much a toss-up. But I'm going to take the Lions 28-25. So kind of a high-scoring game there. Okay, the other one, which could very well be for first place in the seriously, it could be because the Eagles have the Seahawks. I don't imagine the Eagles are going to win. And the Giants are at the Bengals, so there's a good chance they win. But the winner of this is going to go to 4-7, which could very well be at least tied for first place in the NFC East.
Yep.
Washington coming off their big win against Cincinnati. In Dallas, Andy Dalton coming off their big win against Minnesota. How do you see this one going?
This one's tough for me, man, because, you know, with the way Dallas looked this week, their offense looked really good. Granted, it was a very weak Vikings defense that they played against. And the last time they played this Washington football team, Andy Dalton did not look anywhere near as good as he did last week. Granted, they did come off a bye, so maybe they figured some things out. But I don't see Washington winning both games this year against the Cowboys. So for that reason alone, I just don't think anyone in the NFC East is good enough to win both games against their divisional opponent. So I'm going to take the Cowboys in this one. I think it's going to be decent scoring. So I'm going to say it's definitely going to be close. I think it's going to be Cowboys 27. We'll say Redskins 23 this time.
Okay. Redskins again.
Or I'm sorry, Washington football team. Dollar in the jar.
You're going to be canceled on Twitter. So I think I like Dallas here. I think, I don't really like any of them. This is another one. I guess this game maybe looked better coming into the year. Yeah. But I'm going to take Washington here, and we can split on both picks. Maybe I'm just doing it for the sake of that. but I like Alex Smith. He's looked pretty solid. He looked really good against Detroit and then really good this week too against Cincinnati. That's Detroit and Cincinnati, but this is Dallas, so it's not much better. So I think he has the ability. I probably trust him a little bit more than Andy Dalton. And Washington's pass defense is actually pretty good. Pass rush is pretty good with Chase Young. I think I like them better. I think I like them better up and down. They might even be my pick to win the NFC East right now, as weird as that sounds. So you disagree?
No, it doesn't sound weird at all. I mean, they certainly have the best defense in the division.
I think they have the best defense, yeah.
Which doesn't say much, but they do. And Alex Smith is the type of quarterback who generally won't mess it up. So,
well, exactly. That's exactly my thought. And I just don't know if Andy Dalton will mess it up. He very well might.
Right.
So I'm going to take Washington, and I'll go – I think it's going to be generally high scoring, so I'll go 34-29. For a Turkey Day score. So we split on those two games. So how about that? We'll have something to talk about on probably Friday will be our next podcast with Thanksgiving. Maybe we'll
Black
see.
Friday. What
it's yeah, exactly. So, okay. That is all the NFL topics we have for today. Coop, what is going on with the All In Network?
Yeah, so the All in Politics podcast just released an episode over the weekend, and they had an excellent guest, a guy from the Philadelphia area named J. John D. Harrell, former incarcerated person who is now active in the community as far as voter registration for the formerly incarcerated. You know, so they talk a lot about that. They talk about the COVID impact on not only the formerly incarcerated, but those who are incarcerated and the healthcare treatment that they're receiving in prisons during a pandemic is discussed. The major thing that they talk about is the Biden's written plan for Black America. So not just what we think on social media his plan for Black America is. He actually had a written documented plan for Black America called the Lift Every Voice plan. I have tweeted the link for it multiple times, but for some reason it did not gain as much traction as Ice Cube's contract for Black America or Trump's platinum plan. But it's a lengthy, detailed plan for Black America. So they break it down, you know, the strengths, the flaws, all of it is discussed in that episode. So it was a really good episode of All in Politics. So make sure you guys check that out. It's up on our YouTube channel or on audio versions, you know, any platform, Apple, Spotify, Google Podcasts that you can find it on. Stay tuned and follow us on social media as well. If you're watching on YouTube, you can see it down on your screen here, but at @all_in_pod, or on Facebook and IG, we're All in Network. And we might have some merch sales for Black Friday. So stay tuned, for that. We'll release any kind of codes and things like that, that we do for our, merchandise, if you follow us on social media.
Yeah, absolutely. So make sure you're checking out all of that. Make sure you check in with allinnetwork.net to see all of the latest content. Coop's got his power rankings up.
Yes.
The latest edition that he said he was going to remember to plug in. So make sure you go to allinnetwork.net, check out his power rankings, check out everything that we have going on, and check out the app as well, where you can see a lot of our content on there, and it's improving and getting more content. So that is all we got today, guys. Thank you for hanging out with us. This is the All In Podcast.
Yeah, thank you, guys. See you next time.